conversation with queer identified writers about their works and lives.
Welcome to Queer Words. This is Wayne Goodman, and on this episode, I have the delightful pleasure of conversing with AJ Bermudez. Hello, AJ!
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Can we start by having you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. I'm an author and screenwriter. I write fiction. Occasionally, I'm persuaded to write nonfiction. And I write films, all of which are generally very full of queer words. I'm the author of Stories No One Hopes Are About Them, which was published by University of Iowa Press as winner of the Iowa Short Fiction Award, and which I am very thrilled to say has been named a finalist for a Lambda Award.
This is Queer Words, and I do ask my guests, what qualifies you as queer?
Great question. In addition to owning a sizable collection of oversized blazers, I do experience attraction to and have relationships with people of multiple genders. I identify as omnisexual, which is not intended to be hip. I also get down with the term bisexual insofar as it means of one's own gender and of not one's own gender. Bi in that sense, but I'm attracted to and interact with all genders. Without going down an identificational rabbit hole, the acknowledgement of gender as others experience it is really important. For me, omnisexuality allows for that acknowledgement and respect of otherness.
When did you first accept being queer?
This is such a great question. The simple answer is during adolescence, but of course, as is true for many of us, the complex answer is a lot more complex. I grew up in a situation, like many of us, where anything other than heteronormativity was not welcome. Maybe it was not an option. As I got older, not much older, I started to self-acknowledge that I was different. But also at that same time, when I was still fairly young, I lost both of my parents. In that period of time, the people that you would sit down at the table as coming out announcement simply weren't there. They weren't alive. I had an unusual experience in this way where coming out for me was very easy because most of the people that I would have felt beholden to come out to were no longer with us. That's been an unusual situation and one that is fraught for me. My mother certainly must have known. She edited some of my writing when I was very young. Queerness has been in my writing for longer than it's been in my bio. She surely knew and had no judgment. I'm so grateful for that. I think I knew from pretty early to accept being queer. It's so important and it's so individual for every person. I'm still working on the communication of that to certain people in my life.
You probably had some queer hero figures or queeros or sheroes.
I do. All of the above. Quite a few. I've been working both academically and literarily and writing for a bit. I'm very inspired by historical figures who found strategies and parlances around queerness that would allow us to inherit their work. That's been very inspiring to me. We're still doing so much excavation culturally in that sphere that every 2 weeks I learn that someone was gay who I didn't know was gay from 250 years ago. And I'm like, thank God. It's so empowering. I love that. The re-queering of history is so important. My queeros are definitely split between a long lineage of people doing important work in various spheres. Also, people that I know. I'm a big fan of the heroic belonging to the local, of your heroes belonging to the people that you interact with on the regular and the people that you know. In addition to grand historical figures who we all admire, also big literary figures. People like Roxane Gay, who are not only creating their own work, but also generating work for other people in our sphere, is so important. I love Karen Marie Machado, who's doing the Lord's work of color female literature in the queer space. a lot of my queer heroes are people that I actually know. And I'm so thankful for people in real time. We have more people now than ever who are doing important work that we probably know. For me, I have queer heroes that are in my space. One of my best friends is Sarah Locke, who is the executive director of the Democratic National Party in Connecticut, where I lived briefly. She's constantly not only fighting for queer rights and representation, but also reminding me of the intersection of the personal and the political that's so important for queer writers. She's genuinely an inspiration to me. It's such a pleasure to be in the company of people who are working so tirelessly to elevate queer voices in the present.
What about literary influences?
All over the map. Roxane Gay, Carmen Maria Machado. I recently had the opportunity to put together an advanced creative writing syllabus, which is an amazing opportunity to force young people to read the shit that you like to read. But it had everything in it from James Baldwin to Margaret Atwood to Daniel Evans, Richard Mirabella, Sigrid Nunes, a real mix of folks and much more beyond that. I read a lot. My literary influences are who I read and who I interact with. It's important for young writers and readers to be careful about curating who they read. The voices that you let into your room, the people that you allow to be on the page that you're reading in bed or in your office, this is really important. There's what's getting published, which is still extremely heteronormative in most respects. And then there's what you let in. There's what you approve. There's what you are imbibing. I feel that I, at least, have a real responsibility to curate what I'm taking in.
What inspired you to begin writing?
I have been writing since I was very small. When I was a toddler, I would fold sheets of paper in half and write books in them. Obviously, they had gorgeously illustrated covers. I have been writing since I was really, really, really small. I recently recovered some of those old texts. One of my favorites is Karate Princess, strong, female-driven, available. I then worked in a lot of different writing spheres. I've been a playwright. I've been a screenwriter. But I've always returned to literary writing. It's where you have the most voice. I'm a big believer in writing across disciplines. I began writing when I was extremely young, and the rights to Karate Princess are available.
How does queerness impact your writing?
When I began writing, at least in academic settings, much of what I was doing was an imitation of heteronormative, white, male, Eurocentric, all the adjectives stuff. When I began to really write as I grew up, there was more and more of myself in the writing that I was doing. Queerness doesn't impact my writing so much as it's in the woodwork. We can participate in this community in a way that does not have to be queer people writing about coming out or about queerness, but that we are changing the entire dynamic of the literary genre is really important to me.
When it comes to your writing process, do you like to start with an outline and work from structure, or do you sit down and start typing away, or somewhere in the middle?
This will not be popular, but I am a meticulous outliner. It's absolutely connected to my screenwriting work, in which there's no choice. In film, the story has to account for every minute. It can be really valuable for literary writers. My wall is literally a multicolor splay of index cards that correlates perfectly to a spreadsheet that is also color-coded. I'm a huge believer in outlining insofar as it gives freedom to create. I used to hate outlining, but I do see it now as a way of caring for yourself and ultimately caring for the project. that opens up possibility when you are ultimately working.
If people are interested in reading your books, where can they find them?
I would love to encourage folks to support their local bookstores. Please, if you can, request the book from your neighborhood shop. They will order it for you if it's not there already. You can also go to bookshop.org or Amazon, any of the big dogs. If it's not at your local library, I would advocate requesting it there too. Access is incredibly important in literature. I want anyone hungry for weird, queer, multidisciplinary literature to have a shot at it. Local bookshops, local libraries.
I'm hoping you have some of your reading you can share with us.
I do. Thank you. I'll read a very short story from Stories No One Hopes Are About Them, called All the Places You Will Never Be Again. A camera is a little room, she's saying. A chamber, in Latin, you know. And then it's in her hands, thick with ink, bleeding onto the glossy square like an omen. She's towering over you on the mattress, shaking the Polaroid like you've seen people do in movies, her legs quivering for balance beneath a pair of popcorn yellow underwear. She is steel and sweat, jacket but no blouse, all teeth, a man-made wonder. When she touches you, it's like a blister, the sensation dialed up too high to be real. This is when you know, like when the earth shakes in Iowa or the moon rises twice, that you are not awake. This is a frequent one, as is the one where you meet that blush brick, corn-scented, all-girls school in the heart of true nowhere, a blur of plaid and touched knees and pencil-lead speared initial after initial into the wood of your desk. You count this among all the places you will never be again, there and here. The photographs of you, of course, invincibly coy, an almost smile frozen in time. She's blithering about La Tache Vougle, some French film you've never seen, where a figure materializes nothing to something, invisible to visible. Like you, she's saying, the Polaroid box slung across her bare chest. She presents the photo for inspection, and she's right, that pinned-down smile of yours blossoms from sheer absence to a ghost, to something that looks exactly like you. There are boxes of these things, little squares of you in a sundress, you at the grocery, you on a boat, whose boat you can't recall. She's never understood why she took so many. Could she have been afraid even then of forgetting, of missed pills and buried parents? Yours like rooms where lights turn on and off without rationale. Scattered faces and addresses, events softening and sliding together like dirt in rain. She bites your ear at the top, the part called the helix, she's saying. The unruly dark blur of her hair in your mouth and your eyes, and there's another click and whir of the machine, a new square, another you. When you wake up, she'll be her again, and you'll be you. She'll be five times her age, the age she is now, clove smoke and Chenin Blanc, a neon either side of you. You'll be immortal, a slew of you in the box. She's asked for it to be brought here to the hospital, this box of photographs, this box of views. She's shown you a photograph with which she's especially thrilled, you smoking a cigarette fresh out of the shower, fingers splayed as though to ward off the lens, but even in this moment, you're elsewhere. It's not real, you're saying, it's the false you, the you of the photographs, the impeccable you, the you of never again and bliss-stricken now, the you who is always awake. The room is itself a little chamber, a camera in Latin, you know, an angular box of singular incidents, announcings, acceptings, hand squeezings, tracheal insertions, shots, cures, last rites, last words, deaths, births, maybe. This isn't that part of the hospital. Everything is eggshell plastic and recycled sheets, the knit blue blankets, pale and rippled, like the ones you pretend were the ocean as a child. Her fingers are curled around the box in her lap like roots around a stone jutting up from the earth, and this is how she sleeps. You sleep too, curled in the waxy pink shell of a chair beside her, although sleep is a strong word. There are things you'll miss, she's saying. That's La Tache Vougle. But what if you catch them in time, you say, and there's nothing you can do? She is unfazed. She's talking about silver grains, interlayers, and image dyes. She has always insisted on the science, science above all, the way the pieces collapse on themselves, layer on layer, catalyzed by time. You remarked once in a world other than this one, the real world, on the irony that science couldn't save her. Big deal, she had said. Science has better things to do. She bites the pieces of you as though she could keep them, your neck and nose, your hair and little finger. She is magic and misery, a flicker of herself, the nimble, hazy goddess you imagine her to be, like a manuscript on which coffee has been spilled. You look up and it's like seeing her through water. She wavers as though being shaken. She's shown you the pyramids, dragged you to the exhibit of the mummified gazelle, the pharaoh's pet. Can you imagine? She's saying. And you can. You can imagine. She'll want to be buried with these photographs. At first, you'll hate the thought of it, that much of you beneath the earth. But you'll come around, knowing that when she dies, so much of you will be down there anyway. When she wakes, she'll ask for her favorite thing, which is to see the negative layers of plastic laid on top of each other, cell after cell, demonstrating the steady, greedy march of her condition. She never remembers which disease it is, what she has. Good for her. She'll turn to you, not remembering that she's said this before, and say, isn't it something? It is, you say. It is something. Then she's back into the box of photographs, and you hate how many are of you. They're all of you. Why didn't you take more pictures of her? You're the one who will need them. Still, she is transfixed by the thick greens and blues, the interlaced fingers and sheets, the summers of bangs and corduroy, the local politics, the attempts to kill a lobster you had not realized would be sold to you alive. You've seen the pharaoh. And you are the gazelle.
What's your involvement with the queer communities?
More than anything right now, I'm mostly trying to engage with queer communities as an educator, not just engaging with our communities in a meaningful way, but making sure that queer communities can fuse non-queer and at times anti-queer communities. That's extremely important to me. I've had the experience recently of teaching in New England. Serious writers, writers who are and intend to be serious. I have been shocked at the degree to which they don't, even now, right now, they don't feel free to write certain things, to present in certain ways, sometimes even not to use their pronouns. This is tremendously important. We need to create spaces collectively, all of us, individually and as a community, that are not only safe, but actively ushering in queer voices in spaces where queer voices have traditionally not been allowed. There are more spaces than we recognize where that is still true, often at the upper echelons.
How do you use social media to promote your work?
Pretty terribly. I'm pretty bad at social media. I have Instagram. I have Twitter. You can find me on all of them. But mostly those platforms have been valuable as a way to connect with people one-on-one who might otherwise have a hard time getting in touch. And I have really enjoyed connecting with people over social media. And I invite it. I'll be honest about being bad at it.
What do you like to read?
I go in for pretty weird shit. I just finished reading Bora Chong's Cursed Bunny, which is really weird and pretty queer. It's a treasure. I'm also reading some nonfiction right now. I just finished Ruha Benjamin's Race After Technology, which I think is important for anyone who's connected to technology and intersectionality. I keep a pretty deep deck of old stuff and new stuff on my nightstand. I'm always into new work. Right now, I admittedly am reading the Lambda finalists, as I always do which makes it extra weird because I'm a Lambda finalist. I've for years and years trusted the Lammies to guide my reading suggestions in queer literature. For anyone who's looking for a good reading list, I would just say go to the Lammy finalists and read straight down.
Do you have any words of wisdom to pass along to other queer writers?
Be brave and do whatever you want. Straight people certainly do. It's really important to be brave and to do the thing that only you can do. People who are not you have been doing it for a long time. People have been brave and they have been acting courageously without limits for a long time. And the best thing you can do is to do the thing that is generous. The best writing is always generous. You are not only doing the thing that's important for you, but a thing that invites other people to a community and to an experience, to perhaps a vision of literature that they hadn't previously imagined. The best advice I have for young writers is to do something that is true, that is new, and that is distinctly them, because we are in desperate, desperate need of new voices. I'm always grateful for them, personally.
I will say thank you, A.J. Bermudez.
Thank you.
Thank you.